Welcome to the Entrepreneurial Spirit in the Enterprise podcast, produced by Moves the Needle, where we interview top practitioners, senior executives, and innovation thought leaders so you can transform your organization to be closer to customers, move faster, and act bolder.
In today's episode, we're really excited to have our guest, Bennett Blank, an innovation leader at Intuit. Intuit is consistently named one of the world's most innovative large organizations, so we're really excited to cover lots of ground in this episode. We talk about things like how they go about measuring the success of teams based on their ability to impact a customer benefit metric instead of focusing directly on the business impact. We also talk about how culture plays a part in innovation and developing an innovation ecosystem. Beyond that, it's really fun to see Aaron and Bennett jam out together because of their past when they were actually colleagues at Intuit responsible for creating the 100 Startups in 100 Days program, which we dive deeper into towards the end of the show. So without any further ado, let's get into it. We're really excited to have Ben with us today. Ben, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
Good, good. Glad to be here. Happy to be on the phone with some of my favorite people.
Oh, Ben. We're going to talk a little bit about Intuit's journey and kind of the innovation journey that they've been on. Obviously, they're a little bit further down the road than a lot of the companies that are dabbling with lots of these lean startup techniques and tools and tactics and whatnot. So, Ben, if you don't mind, could you just start by telling us a little bit about yourself, what you do at Intuit, and your journey within Intuit's innovation ecosystem?
Sure, you got it. Maybe I'll start by just sharing with you guys a little bit about my history, and then I'll jump into kind of what I do now. Just so folks out there know, I joined Intuit almost 10 years ago and spent several years kind of in the trenches as a designer and product manager in several teams here, primarily in our TurboTax group, trying to basically come up with new ideas, new innovations, bring those things to market for our TurboTax division and our consumer, what at the time was called the consumer group. And so definitely have a background in actually trying to do this stuff in a large organization. And through that process, discovered a lot about what works and what doesn't when it comes to delivering new products and services to market inside the context of a large enterprise, as well as some of the great techniques that, you know, are sort of now very widely known around lean startup and running rapid experimentation and trying to put some rigor behind your hypotheses. All those best practices were things that, you know, we were dabbling with, not for the exercise of academic research, but from the exercise of just trying to get our work done. After doing that for a few years, I actually moved to a coaching role here at Intuit, where I was trying to help other teams basically learn from mostly the mistakes that I'd made and apply those learnings to their own projects. And that's when Aaron and I, and the backstory as to why I'm on this call, that's when Aaron and I first teamed up to create a program here called 100 Startups in 100 Days, which was a let's call it a virtual accelerator, where we decided to see how if we could start 100 startup ideas within the company in a very short amount of time. And that program went on to be very successful at Intuit. It was actually called the Lean Start In for Intuit, of course. And you know, lives on to this day as a program that really helps people apply lean startup principles to their day job. So since then, in running that program, I've gone on to be part of a small team that's called the Transformational Change Team here at Intuit, and we work in the office of the president, basically reporting directly to our CEO. And our group's job is to continually change and improve the way we actually work at Intuit. And so that might mean learning new skills as a company. It might mean operating rhythm. It might mean new innovation programs. But ultimately, our job is to help the entire company improve the way it actually works. So it's pretty cool stuff. I get to do a lot of coaching and coming up with new stuff. And I like to joke, experimenting on how we actually work, which is a lot of fun. So that's what I do now. My current title is Innovation Leader. I'm a member of a six-person team that does this work. I'm at Intuit.
That's awesome. One thing I want to piggyback on what Ben said is that in addition to that, Ben has significant startup experience, which is one of the key reasons that happened inside of Intuit. is really behaving like entrepreneurs. And then the second thing that I want to add is that, or clarify, one of the statements you made in that description, Ben, was really, you know, around applying this to launch new products and services. And the fact of the matter is that I know you've learned over the last few years that it may even be more impactful when applied in the functional groups and other parts of the business, as opposed to just for new products and services.
Yeah, that's a great point, Aaron. As you well know, one of our biggest discoveries in this journey at Intuit is that, you know, maybe I would even go as far to say as one of the secrets of doing this at scale in large organizations is that there are many places throughout the company where you see benefit in applying these principles as well as the tools and techniques of Lean Startup. I use Lean Startup specifically, but just innovation best practices in general. Because a lot of those places in the organization, like HR and, you know, like finance and like legal, these places that have never really approached their work as a product, they've never really approached their work as a product manager might. And so for them, it's been quite transformational. It's been some of our most exciting gains, both in improvements in the business, but also in employee engagement and getting people excited about how we work at Intuit, which again is one of my roles here, is to make sure the company is functioning with regards to how we actually work. So that's a great point, Aaron. I might even tell a story. I think somebody here, Catherine Harris, who's I'm a big fan of hers, has done a really great job applying some of this to our HR hiring process, for example, and developed a whole program that we run at Intuit now for all new employees. And basically she followed, she's a former product manager herself. And so it was very easy for her to realize she could apply this to the HR function. Again, not traditionally a product focused function with great success. So it's a great point, Aaron, that once you've got the entire organization doing it beyond product, you start to see gains that are tremendous in terms of the, using the cliche maybe of the rising tide rises all boats kind of a thing. The whole company operates better because of it.
That makes a lot of sense. Can you describe a little bit about kind of the innovation maturity level of Intuit? So like what are some of the things from an innovation perspective that Intuit's doing really well today? And what are some of the current barriers or maybe current opportunity areas?
Yeah, I think, you know, generally speaking, what makes Intuit quote unquote mature at innovation is we've just been doing it a while. And so on some level that means that the culture has had time to kind of catch up to the latest tools and techniques that maybe one or two teams were doing in the early days. Now the rest of the organization understands. When we talk about rapid experimentation here or customer empathy or brainstorming, any of these things that we talk about, it's not like one small team understands what that is. Most of the company understands what that is. Most employees at least have have heard about it. A large majority of them have practiced it to some degree, and there's a decent number who actually are pretty good at it. So that's one of the huge things that gives us a little bit of I think a leg up is that all this time and energy we've invested over the years in helping everyone at Intuit be more innovative, you know, has really started to pay dividends for us because we don't have to, we don't have to retrain people all the time. It's just a part of our culture. Now, the shadow of that is, you know, we've always got to be improving it. We've got to make it better. People join our company all the time. People leave, of course, as any organization would. So we have new people that we need to, bring up to speed on our culture and let them experience for themselves how to actually do these things. That's one of the big challenges we have, that we're a very small team. And so, you've got that constant sort of new employees coming on that need to be brought up to speed. That can be quite quite challenging, while at the same time improving that process as you go. So we're also invest a lot in looking outside our four walls and seeing what's working out in the world of innovation. That's how we discovered Lean Startup in the first place. So we continue to do that. And then we import the things that work best and customize it for our own culture. I think one of the challenges is always about how to scale it. So how do you pick those things that are truly going to be transformational versus the things that are, you know, maybe a little bit different than what we're doing, but not necessarily better. So, you know, my team will often spend time running experiments to see what things would actually be better. If we have a team A operating in a certain way, is that team actually better off than a team maybe operating in a different way? So it's just a constant process, just like, you know, you guys know from a startup perspective, it's a constant process of improving our actual innovation capability as we go. It's a big challenge.
No, that's awesome. What are some of the kind of levers of transformation that you've been focused on? Obviously, there's lots of different moving pieces. There's training and all sorts of different mechanisms that you're using to kind of scale this throughout the culture. But what have you found to be some of those best and most effective levers when it comes to driving transformation?
You know, I think it's the obvious ones hold true for innovation, just like they would for any other function or any other initiative that change initiative that a company wants to undertake. You've got to have support at the senior level to actually do it. And do it might look and feel differently in each situation, but if you don't have senior leadership support at some point, you're not going to be able to scale. You may have small areas that you see some traction, but you know, to really go from just a small number of people doing it to the entire organization doing, you've got to have some senior level support and real support. You know, those senior folks exhibiting the behavior themselves, championing innovation type projects, holding teams accountable to innovation metrics and things that we've said measure progress in the context of innovation. So you got to have that. You've got to, of course, you've got to fund the training and the actual helping people understand how to do the work. Oftentimes when I talk to external companies, you know, they will say, well, we just can't seem to get our employees to work this way. And my question is always, well, how much have you invested in actually teaching them how to do that? And the answer is usually, well, zero. We gave them the book and then, you know, we did a PowerPoint slide training and sent them on their way. And for some reason they haven't come back, you know, as experts. And I always joke, it's just like playing a musical instrument. You don't learn how to play an instrument by viewing a PowerPoint deck. You learn to play an instrument by picking it up, playing it, and practicing it every day. So that's something that has really helped us be successful, is that we practice it, or we attempt to, every single day. It doesn't mean we're awesome and play amazing music every day. It just means that we try. So we try really hard to do that. I think that's one of the secrets of doing this at scale, is you've got to actually do it, or at least try to. That's what makes you better.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. So when it comes to kind of transformational change, and I mean, the work that your team is focused on, how do you go about measuring success? You alluded briefly to some of the kind of metrics that you use to track success. Can you dive a little bit deeper as to how you go about quantifying and using metrics to define that?
Sure. So at Intuit, we have... each product, or you know, in the cases of teams that are not necessarily going after a specific external product, maybe an internal product like HR or whatnot, we try to define something we call customer benefit metrics. And what that really is that's the guiding light for any team that's working on just about anything at Intuit, whether that's an incremental innovation or a transformational type of new idea. We're always trying to identify what is that thing that matters to the customer. And then we orient the work around improving that metric. Just as an example, there's a very important customer benefit for TurboTax, which is centered around how quickly, you know, the time it takes to get your taxes completed. Because obviously it's a huge benefit that we save you time and effort in doing your taxes each year. So we measure teams that are working on innovations around TurboTax on whether or not they've actually reduced that time. And so it's a customer-centric measure of progress, and it's a customer-centric measure of whether or not that team is actually making an improvement in the customer's life. That's what we try to focus on first. There are other interim measures, like how quickly a team is interacting with customers is something we like to look at. How often they've actually run an experiment, how quickly they run experiments, that sort of thing. But ultimately, it's whether or not the team is making progress towards improving a customer benefit. And again, those benefits might be very different depending on the various products that we're working on. But that's really the goal of any given team, is to increase their speed towards that benefit.
Is the how do those benefits end up being defined in that case? That's sort of a tops-down effort, or what does that look like to define the benefits?
It's part of the customer empathy that you do when you first, you know, begin the journey, is to set out to identify what are the things that, first off, the customer would actually know if you improved their life. And so it's part of the research. It's part of the combing through customer verbatims and talking with customers on the phone and trying to figure out, so what really is the improvement in their life that they're receiving from this product? And you know, it's easier for products that have been around for a while because you have customers, you can talk to them, and you can figure it out. And frankly, a lot of them are known. For new products, it's a little more of an art, where you're talking to early users or people that are, you know, maybe in analog situations, and trying to figure out, you know, what really is the benefit here. And then once you've done that, trying to establish some number, and some metric behind that, whether it's, I mean, time is an easy one because, you know, obviously it's days, hours, minutes, that kind of thing. It could be something else. It could be, you know, percentage of your salary that you save for a rainy day. And that number today is let's call it 5%. And a team might believe that, well, if you can put 10% away, that's a really good thing. And so they set that customer benefit metric to be some percentage of salary. And I'm kind of just making this up, but that's how a team would approach that, assuming that they've uncovered that that's something that's valuable to a customer. That's the key here, is that the customers have to feel that it's valuable, and the customers have to sort of be aware of that number. And then once you do that, all of the work can kind of fall behind closing that gap. So basically what you've done is set up a little bit of a game for the teams, where the measure today is it's X, and we want to get it to Y in the ideal state. How quickly can we make that happen? And that's a very transformational way for teams to think about it, because they're no longer thinking about the solutions that they're building. They're thinking about the outcomes for customers, which can be maybe not easily measured, but when you measure them, you'll know you're headed the right way.
It reminds me a lot of the work that Brent did with the in the Lean Entrepreneur book around the value stream. Defines, you know, very specifically what are the behaviors that let you know that your customer is benefiting from your product, and how do you continue to move them through that process, and specifically measure that along the way. One of the biggest benefits that I've seen, or one of the biggest impacts that I've seen from organizations of applying that kind of thinking and that kind of working, is really that not only does it help focus the teams and make sure that it's, you know, that they're focused on things that are going to be a positive for the customers, but it also breaks down the silos in an organization, right? If you're looking at how do I reduce the amount of time that it takes for my customer to be able to file their taxes, part of that's going to be in the product team, part of that's going to be in IT, part of that might be in finance, it could be all over the place, right? And so what I see over and over again is that it's a silo buster, and that on its own is, you know, worth its weight in gold, or however you want to put it.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, if you think about it in terms of, or I like to think about it in terms of how much, how much of a change do teams want to make in their world? And so if it's a established product and you want to incrementally improve it, you know, very slowly as you go, then, you know, silos are probably okay. And there's not a whole lot of change month over month or year over year even. But frankly, that's probably not the speed you want to be moving. And that's probably going to mean you're too slow in this world where just about anybody can create, especially in the software world, can create a competing product to you literally overnight. How do you increase the speed in which those teams are moving? The faster you start to go, the more you need to have all the people kind of, you know, in the car with you as you're driving, so that you can make those decisions, because the future is approaching faster and faster and faster and faster. And so to your point, you've got to have everybody working together, or else you're not going to be able to take those bigger risks. So, you know, related to your point about everybody working together, what ends up happening when you're able to do that is you can actually take bigger risks. And what was an incremental improvement becomes a little bit more than just incremental and maybe slightly transformational. And what was formerly slightly transformational becomes a big step change. So it really helps absolutely to get everybody on the same page. But, you know, identifying what those customer benefits are is really the first step that gets people really excited.
Yeah, no, it seems like
we've been talking. Sorry, Sam.
No, please.
I got excited. I just realized that we've been talking for just a little while here, almost entirely theoretical. So, can you share a story or two about how focusing on customer benefits has increased impact for a product, or helped break down silos, or whatever example you'd like? But can you share a tangible example?
Sure. And maybe I'll share the one that I started off with. That's an internal idea related to how we hire people at Intuit. And, you know, of course, there are many people in that ecosystem of bringing new people, you know, into a company. There's the hiring manager, which is the person who actually needs a new resource. They actually need a person on their team. So they're looking for somebody. There's an HR function, which is whose job is to, you know, make sure people get hired in the right way and provide some compliance and, you know, the formalities around hiring. There's the candidates, of course, out in the world who would love to come work at Intuit. Half, you know, some of which are going to actually become employees, and more of which are likely, you know, might not make the cut. This round anyway, but maybe they're going to make it in the future. So right there, we've got four different kind of customer groups that we're dealing with, all of which have different benefits. But if you think for a second, the obvious ones are, of course, people who are applying would like to get a job. But for the hiring manager, one of the big benefits is not so much that they just get anybody on their team. It's that they get somebody on their team who is, you know, a cultural fit, as a skills fit, and can work together with the team in a certain way, and ultimately it becomes a good hire for that team. It's a great fit for the team. So the benefit for that hiring manager is not just the warm body, but somebody who fits and can contribute very quickly to the progress of the team. If we think about that, in that example, the process that was in place to go get potential employees to fill those roles was, it took a lot, let's just say it took longer than those hiring managers expected. And it was a longer time frame. And often the candidates that were coming through weren't necessarily a perfect fit for that situation. They may have been a great fit for Intuit. They may have been highly skilled, but maybe not quite for that situation. And so you can think of a world where of the X number of candidates that would come in, there was a time component to that where it would take, you know, weeks to get enough people through where you could find somebody that you made an offer to. And then the percentage of those that actually fit was lower than 100%. So what you would hope would happen is you would get almost instant access to qualified candidates, and almost 100% of those people that you made an offer to would be a perfect fit. So the customer benefit for that hiring manager were those two things: speed to hire and quality of the actual fit. And so that's what the team established as the goals for developing this new hiring process, which Katie and her team, Catherine and her team, ended up calling Assessing for Awesome. And through this new, and it took them many, many, many months to kind of work on this, but through this process, they kind of ended up settling on an idea. Again, just to be clear, after many rounds of testing and experimenting, they settled on an idea which kind of brings the candidates in, and the hiring manager and the team that are this person's actually going to work on are hands-on in, you know, vetting potential candidates and actually working. They actually work together on kind of a mock project to find out exactly whether or not they are going to get along in the real world. And then they're able to make an offer kind of to what is going to be the hopefully the best possible candidate. And what they found was that the time to actually get that person in the job was dramatically reduced when they cut out a lot of the steps, and they kind of let the team be a lot of ways self-empowered to go find those people. And then second, a larger percentage of those people hired were perfect fits for the job. Again, it seems sort of obvious in retrospect, but I think that's something a lot of large organizations try to do. You mentioned, Aaron, silo-wise, they try to kind of break that process down and have maybe some recruiters out there in the world, you know, coming up with the first pass, and then they go through a screener, and all those people doing the initial work are not necessarily the teams. And this Assessing for Awesome program kind of flipped that around, where the teams are very quickly cutting to the chase with prospects and finding out who might be a good fit. And it was quite successful, to the point where we're now scaling that beyond the small pilot test to something that, you know, we hope in the future every employee will go through it, an opportunity to work with the real team before they step foot in the door, which is pretty cool.
That sounds really awesome. Although it also sounds a little innovation fluffy. So what's the business impact?
Well, the business impact is the teams that are looking to hire new people, they can actually get somebody who is going to be a perfect fit much quicker, with much higher confidence that they've chosen the right person. And so their productivity goes up, of course, because they're not waiting around for a potential candidate. And even worse, they're not wasting cycles on somebody who turns out is not a good fit. And then what do? You've got to go through that process all over again and maybe find a different role for the person that you just hired. So there's it removes a lot of that overhead and the downside of hiring the wrong person from the equation. So teams can get going much faster. Another side note, I've heard just anecdotally from folks that, you know, they're more excited to bring new people onto their teams now, because it's not a potential risk. It's actually a potential upside that they can go find somebody who is perfectly suited to work on this project. So in that case, the quote unquote business impact is measured in terms of the customer benefit, again, for that hiring manager. So that's how they try to think about it. And once it's delivered a benefit for that manager, then we look at, okay, so how has that impacted the business? Well, it's less downtime, right people for the right job, that sort of thing. What we're finding is that if you've identified your customer benefit metrics appropriately, and you're improving those metrics, then you're delivering value to the customer. And when you do that, business results follow. And if you think about it, it kind of makes sense, right? But I think a lot of organizations start with what's the business metric I'm trying to change? And then they work back from that to, what things can I do to my customers in order to get them to do what I want from a business perspective, when it's actually the other way around? So when teams start thinking about customer benefits first, it's a very new way of thinking about how to measure progress, but it fits very well with, you know, what I think most lean startup people would sort of nod their head and say, yeah, that's what we mean by, Aaron, you mentioned it, that's what we mean by a value stream, or that's what we mean by product market fit, or that's what we mean by some of these terms that are out there in the startup world. Because when you're a startup, you obviously don't have any business metrics. All you've got are customer metrics.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's really cool. And I think it's a testament to your guys' kind of level of maturity to prioritize customer benefit over some of the business metrics, because I think it really is the kind of cause that leads to the effect of the business impact rather than the other way around. So it's really cool. Now yeah, I kind of want to take a step back real quick and jump into kind of the culture side of this equation. I know a lot of your work is focused on kind of transforming the culture. I mean, what are the core values of a culture that is really kind of resilient to a rapidly changing marketplace, right? What are some of the values that you've been trying to embed throughout the organization in your efforts?
You sort of mean just generically at a high level, some of the values that I think are important.
Yeah. And I mean, getting down into, you're focused a lot on scaling this kind of helping everybody throughout the organization, regardless of what product team they're on, or if they're focused on an internal project, be more innovative, and really just kind of transforming the way that people approach their work on a daily basis. What are the core values that you've been trying to promote within the organization to kind of set up the company for long-term success and also on the individual well-being level too?
Yeah. So maybe I'll start with, there are a couple of, let's call them universal principles that we try to instill in everything we do. Aaron, these will be very familiar to you, but those principles, maybe they're a little more specific than what you're asking, but I'll kind of talk a little bit about why these principles are important. The first principle of the three principles here that we focus on in terms of innovation is deep customer empathy. And so that's a principle that just says that everything we do should start with the customer first. It means understanding our customers better than they know themselves. It means generating insights from customers. It means, as I was mentioning before, establishing metrics that matter to customers. But just orienting ourselves around a customer-centric first point of view is something that is one of our principles, and is, you know, that sets the right direction for teams. The second is going broad before we narrow. And that just means once you've done the first principle, you can start to think about lots of different solutions and exploring many different ways of working before you settle on one direction. So you, again, can imagine a world where there's the assessing for awesome example I shared with you earlier. The team went through, you know, many, many different ways that they might attack that problem before they settled on their final solution. And then the third is rapid experiments with customers. That is very much, you know, should be familiar to anybody who's lean startup oriented. That means testing whatever solution you come up with customers in a real behavioral setting, so that you can see whether or not that's actually solving the problem for the customer or actually delivering some improvement to those metrics that matter. And then through that process, you generate, of course, new insights, which leads you back to empathy, and the principles sort of begin all over again. So those three things are principles on how you should be moving forward in your work at Intuit. Those are our core innovation principles. I think at a higher level, what those principles allow us to do as an organization is just become more flexible and respond quicker to market conditions or competitors or even improving our own products. And so I think, you know, the organizations of the future, if you want to survive, remain relevant, and hopefully grow and thrive, those are organizations that focus on the customer first. Second, they know how as an organization to respond very quickly to new trends, again, threats, those sort of things that are in market, and can actually deliver products, solutions, services, whatever you want to call it, that truly do delight the customer and go above and beyond. And so, I mean, there's a short list of companies out there that can actually do that. And that's really what we're trying to do at Intuit, is set up an environment for us where we're able to very quickly react to what's going on in the world around us very quickly with, you know, what our customers would determine are awesome solutions. So I think that's just a fundamental skill of corporations in the age that we live in. And so to our listeners out there, anybody who's thinking about, should I do this or not? You know, I sort of would think you'd be crazy not to try to improve your agility or your responsiveness to the world out there. So I think that's the fundamental reason that we do it. yes, it's kind of fun too. And at the end of the day, it's a, I believe it's a better way to work. But you know, it makes our organization more resilient. Gives us a little more grit maybe to work through challenges that we encounter, than an organization that's just doing things one way. And if that one way doesn't work, all of a sudden, you know, you're BlackBerry and you're out of business. We don't want to be in that situation.
I think it's you're absolutely right. It's fundamental to doing business today. I had the pleasure of getting to tour SpaceX about a month ago, and I was there at about 9 p.m. On a weeknight, and it was packed, full of people, all working, music blasted, having a good time, completely just cranking, right? Hundreds of people in there. And it really dawned on me, I was like, oh my God, like I'm in here in this giant building with these huge rockets that are getting ready to be launched into space. And my tour guide tells me, you know, no rocket is the same as the last rocket that we just launched. Every rocket is different. We're learning every single time. And it totally dawned on me that they were launching rockets faster than most of our customers are even able to launch a website. Absolutely insane.
Yeah.
And so I think you're spot on with that. The world is moving so quickly that you've got to be agile. You've got to be able to keep up. Otherwise, somebody else is going to come and take that market share.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I always tell teams, it's about your team's ability to deliver the future faster than your competitor. And so I love the SpaceX example, right? For a company, let's use this as an example, right? There's a company out there that wants to launch a satellite. They can go to NASA and pay a lot of money and wait a long time to get that in orbit, or they can build their own rocket or whatever. SpaceX guys have reduced the cost and the time it takes to do that. And so they're going to steal market share from anybody else who's out there trying to launch rockets. And I apologize, I don't know enough about the rocket business, but at the end of the day, you know, I watch those videos like everybody else. The first five or six times the rocket tried to launch on and land on its own, it crashed, right? And frankly, they didn't care. They showed the video. They're like, that's part of learning. But then eventually they got it. All the planning in the world would not have got you to that outcome faster than running the actual experiments. There is no planning you can do to get there faster. It's impossible. You only get there through learning and trying. That's the only way to generate real actionable insights. And so that's, again, a trend I see a lot when I talk to organizations of, well, you know, why don't you just do a better job of planning, or why can't you? It just doesn't work like that. For anything significantly new to the world, there's not enough information that you can gather about that new thing in order to make, let's call it a successful decision. You have to learn by doing. So it's a great example, Aaron.
Every day that goes by, there's more search and less execution.
Yeah,
we're running low on time, so I've gotta ask this. So, will you tell us the short version of the 100 Startups in 100 Days story? Because it's probably not fair for me to tell it. And will you please make sure to include what has happened over the last couple of years since you and I did that? And I've been off running Moves the Needle, and you've been transforming into it.
Yeah, yeah, sure. You're right. That is a lot longer conversation.
Yeah.
I will
short version. Sorry.
Yeah. No, I will say the short version, at least this is how I remember it. So just to be clear, too, I could be fuzzy.
Yeah, don't trust any of this. Hey, for those of you listening, don't trust any of this. No, I'm kidding. Go ahead, Ben.
Yeah. You're going to have to drag Aaron and I out for a beer, and then we'll tell you what really happened. No, but in all seriousness, it started with just an idea that Aaron and I had that, hey, you know what? Some of this lean startup stuff that, you know, Intuit already has this culture in place, but lean startup is a great way to turbocharge it and a great way to accelerate what we're already doing. I wonder if we could get a bunch of people in a room and create a workshop and a series of events that teams could go through where they could actually you know, go from zero to a launched product, zero to, you know, customers and market, which is essentially product market fit. We all call it that now, but at the time we didn't really use those words. Could we do that? And just to make things sort of fun, we said, you know, 100 startups in 100 days. And the reason it was 100 days is because we had about one quarter left in the year, if I recall, Aaron. We had like just a little bit of time to go see if we could do this. And lucky for us, Intuit has something called unstructured time where employees can spend 10% of their time on anything they'd like. And so Aaron and I decided we would spend our time on that project. But of course, we weren't going to actually do that until we proved we could do it with at least one team. So we ran a quick experiment right here in San Diego, where we invited a few of our own colleagues here at Intuit to spend a weekend. And at the time, it was over a weekend because, you know, we were all busy with our day jobs. And so we gave up a weekend, spent time in one of our conference rooms working through, a process that we would apply to new business ideas. And through that journey, we learned a lot about what works and what doesn't work, again, on those foundational principles that I mentioned before. And it turned out about half of it worked. And so we rolled that into the next test of about half of that worked. And we rolled that into the next test until we got to the point where we actually had a pretty decent workshop plus coaching mentor model that we decided to roll out to any senior leader at the company that wanted to turbocharge their business results or wanted to engage their employees in innovation. And there was a lot of interest in the time. This was, correct me if I'm wrong, Aaron, but maybe 2012. So 4 years ago, there was a lot of interest in lean startup at the time and really boosting rapid experimentation. And so Aaron and I hit the road and visited 10 different Intuit sites as far away as the UK. And as close as right here in sunny San Diego, and we tried our best.
Hey, we did Australia and Singapore too.
That's right, Australia, Singapore. I think we did 5 different countries by the time we were done with this thing. And like you would expect from 100 startups in 100 days, and a lot of sleepless nights. Most of those ideas don't actually have merit. Most of those ideas don't actually work, but a small number of them do, and those go on to actually produce a large impact in the organization. We had it started as a few $100,000 impact. Some of those ideas went on to be a few $1 million worth of impact, onto a few tens of millions of dollars of impact, to the point now where we have a few teams that, instead of sort of following this lean, we call it the lean start in boot camp, they actually just work like this every week. Every single week is a new round of experiments, and every single week is a new learning journey where they're creating things very quickly and testing them with customers for real. And so we have teams that are just ones that sits right next to me that is, I can't really go into the details of the project, but on a daily basis, they are engaging customers and running their experiments. So it's been transformational in how we work. And had some very significant wins, again, to the tune of tens of millions of dollars have come from that initiative alone. And at this point, it's almost hard to measure because it's a part of the DNA more so than it is a specific thing anymore. It's just become something that we all do. And so the whole organization has benefited from it, Aaron, as you mentioned, beyond product teams, down to the Assessing for Awesome program you just mentioned is, Katie actually attended one of those events. And so she's gone on to improve her day job work based off of this. So I think the big takeaway is the program itself was exciting, compelling, and successful. But most importantly is it leaves ripples with all of the people who had gone through it. And those folks went back to their day jobs and then made big improvements there. And people that were on those teams went on to make big improvements to their day job. It's kind of like an ongoing ripple effect, which is really cool now to see some of these folks transform their own careers even by learning how to do this stuff. It's become a superpower in terms of how to do innovation inside a large organization. So that was a really exciting program. We've gone on, of course, to build on it since then, but Yeah, Aaron, I was bummed that you went on your out on your own to share that kind of stuff with the rest of the world, but sounds like you're doing amazing stuff out there with it. So
trying to make an even bigger impact. A couple of things that I want to share with the audience that I think are relevant in that example as well. Number one, just in what the QuickBooks Enterprise team did with changing their licensing model drove a 15% business impact for that business as a whole. So I think your numbers might even be a little bit low, which is fine. Doesn't matter. And then the other thing that Ben and I discovered was that employee engagement scores on the annual employee surveys were increased, which was really significant, especially from an HR perspective and employee retention and those kinds of things, which always also translates to bottom line. And then boosted net promoter scores for the products where people were applying these. But I think you're absolutely right. Like the biggest piece is the cultural change and the fact that, you know, people continue to apply it and find other opportunities for it. It becomes almost immeasurable after a point in time. And then the second point that I want to make is that at the point in time when Ben and I did this, I was a product manager, and I believe Ben, you were a senior product manager at that point in time. And so neither one of us had, you know, quote unquote leadership titles inside the organization, but were able to drive that level of change in the company. And so, you know, I think this podcast, we get a mix of innovation executives that are trying to figure out how to make this work in their own organizations. So for those folks, I would say, you know, look for those opportunities to create an environment where employees can actually do these kinds of things because they do want to do these. They do want to make an impact. And then the second thing is that if you're not in a management position or you don't have a position, you know, a quote unquote leadership position, that doesn't matter. You should do the right thing for the company and make an impact on that company regardless of your title. I think, you know, what Ben and I were able to accomplish is proof that that's the case. Do the right thing and the rest will come.
Yeah. And I think that the other thing that was, now you're getting me thinking about, you know, some of the things we did right, is plenty of things we did wrong, but one of the things we did right was
too many to list.
we applied the lean startup, you know, principles and our own innovation principles to the process itself that we were following. And so we had when we talk about customer benefit, one of the benefits of teams and people going through this process was what you just mentioned. They were actually happier. They preferred to work this way. They actually were able to get to results quicker. And they saw business results a lot faster than they would had they gone through traditional routes. They were also able to explore ideas that were bolder, farther afield than their core work. And when those ideas proved to be maybe not as fruitful as they thought, a lot of the insights and learnings they were actually able to apply back to their day jobs, which then, you know, brought everybody along. So there were many benefits to doing the process. And I would totally echo what you said, that as long as you are aligning your work with what's important to your organization, which, you know, Aaron and I made, I think, did a good job of making sure we weren't doing it just for fun. We were doing it because we wanted to make into it better, a better place to work for us, but also for everybody that was working alongside us. And so that was a goal that the organization had, and we went out and just took it upon ourselves to solve it. So if anybody out there is listening and thinking like, how do I get started? Well, you get started by not thinking about what you want, but thinking about having that same level of empathy for your organization and your leaders. Go solve a problem that matters for your company. And there is no doubt that people will listen. Assuming that you're following the process itself and you're sharing what you've learned and you're sharing your journey and you're running your experiments, you'll get to a working solution because this process works. There's just, I've never seen it not work. Each individual experiment might not work, but the process will work. It's that's why Lean Startup is so popular now and has been adopted by so many organizations, is because it's, at the end of the day, it works.
Yeah, no, and I think that's a great kind of closing point too, because I think this is the entrepreneurial spirit podcast, and what you're touching on to a large extent too is take it upon yourself. Let the entrepreneurial spirit roam free. If you see a better way, make it happen. So on that note, Ben, thank you so much for your time and insights. We definitely appreciated this, and I'm sure the audience will too.
Awesome. You're welcome, guys. Good luck out there, and anybody who's listening, go have at it.
Well, we hope that you really enjoyed that episode of the Entrepreneurial Spirit Podcast. As always, if you have any different ideas for topics or guests, do not hesitate to reach out to us via Twitter at MovesTheNeedle. Also, if you think somebody in your organization would find value through listening to this episode, please do not hesitate to pass along the link. As we continue to find and recruit these awesome guests to the show, it's really important that we ensure that everybody that would get value from them does. So, with that said, thank you so much, and we'll see you again soon.